Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure today to be joined by Jen and Tracy. Welcome, Jen and Tracy.
Thanks, Michael.
Tracy,
thanks,
are you
Michael.
There? Oh, hi. Hi. Hey, tell us about Africa.
Where to start, really?
Yes.
I actually was just emailing Tracy today because, you know, as we promised, actually, Michael, you'll have to tell me, has the blog come out saying that we're sorry that the final blog hasn't come out yet?
Yes, I just read it.
Okay, good. So we had this big plan that we weren't going to do any blogging back on U.S. soil. We were going to get it all done ahead of time because we're actually in the middle of a retreat right now, so we knew we had to hit the ground running when we got home. Well, best laid plans. That didn't happen. So we were going to really, really push to get it done, and then we realized, well, we don't need to do that. We can, we can pull it together after the retreat. So I was starting to look at the photographs from the last day and get prepared to do that process, and I emailed Tracy and said, boy, it's extraordinary. We didn't mean to do it, but really, in that last day, we essentially documented a day in the life of Living Compassion in Zambia. Everything is in there. It's really quite neat.
Wow.
So I'm not going to give it away because we're going to, type it all up for you and post it so that people can see and walk through that last day with us. But it really was pretty fun, and it made me remember what really an extraordinary trip it was and how much we did and how much ground was covered.
You know, when you said that, I thought immediately of, there is the book, A Day in the Life of Camp Lomé.
I know. I had the same thought. I mean, really, this one set of pictures is kind of the whole thing. Yeah. So, I don't know. I thought it might be fun to hear from Tracy, like, what stood out for her on the trip, because, you know, we always hear from me, and I've been there many, many times. So, I just thought it would be, Tracy, this is your fourth trip with us?
This is my fourth trip, and the last time I was there was July of 2007, so it's been almost 3 years since I've been there.
Wow, that's
amazing. And, it's like there's so much to say, and if I were to say what I walked away from this trip was, in the years, I would say like from 2007 to 2010, what an absolutely extraordinary, talking about the pictures, the day in life of Cantaloba, what an extraordinary community they have created. And, and last time I was there, I have so many pictures of different snapshots of, meeting this person, this woman that, had a sore in her leg and she was selling charcoal and she couldn't walk to get charcoal and she was trying to feed her kids. And, we ended up getting her some medical attention, which was, 90 days of getting her ankle scraped out. And, meeting this person who was our taxi driver and meeting this person who was, a woman who showed up for adult education class, and seeing the same faces and how through life and people showing up and willingness and, saying yes to an invitation to participate, what has really unfolded.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this year for me, probably the biggest impact was realizing how many lives have been affected by our grassroots efforts.
Mm-hmm.
The 38 team members, have extended out into, hundreds of family members and the ability to pay for, tuitions for their kids to go to school, to, the children that we're feeding, the hundreds of kids that we're feeding and witnessing their packing up, usually about half of their meal to take home to other family members and, watching the, their siblings outside the gates and kind of the handoff of the food. And it's just, it is heartwarming at how the generosity of this, the trickle down, the generosity of our donors and their willingness to participate.
Mm-hmm.
And just how each, even like a roof loan program, it, from here, even reading it from afar, what a great thing. And then to actually hear from one of the recipients of how much of a difference it's made, you know, going from expending all the energy to moving around, you know, all over the place in their house at nighttime trying to get out of the puddles, to what a difference it's made, you know, having the opportunity to sleep in, you know, within dryness. And so I guess just the experience of, oh my goodness, just, you know, the number of lives that are being impacted, both,
yes,
you know, within all the contributions here, as well as the contributions they're making there, and how many different, what would be the word, just the trickle-down effect.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's so fun, Tracy. I hadn't really thought about how you really saw kind of this fast forward in time, where, so there's Regina, who the last time you saw Regina, she had this huge sore on her leg. Just, I mean, I won't even go into the detail because it's just too gory, but just, oh, life-threatening sore on her leg. Last time you saw Moyondo, we had just met him as this guy who seemed like a pretty reliable taxi driver. And then fast forward 3 years, here's Regina, completely healthy, got this fabulous family. She's making a living. She's supporting her, you know, she's all set. And there's Moyondo, who's now a part of the project, who's the project reporter. I just, that's really, really fun to have that kind of fast-forward perspective on it.
Yeah, and then even to see our taxi driver turn, you know, from a person engaged in a newspaper, you know, in his time, and he wasn't driving us around, to just jumping in there and engaging with really every opportunity that would present itself, you know, helping setting up the sewing machines, helping climbing the tree when the internet folks came, and just what is possible, just saying yes.
Yeah. Wasn't that, that was really one of my most fun moments of the trip was, so it was, I guess, a morning meeting that Tracy and I had with Moyondo where we really solidified, we really do want you as part of the team in this other way. I mean, he's been driving for us for years, but we'd like to have you come onto the team as reporting, you know, taking photographs, writing stories, sending them back to us. And so we drove out to the property, out to Cantalumba, and he got right out of the car. He had the camera in his hands, and he followed me around. Everything I did the rest of that day, he followed me around and took photographs and took notes on what we were doing. It was so much fun.
Sounds like there's maybe some blogging in his future.
Yeah, it definitely. Definitely. He wrote this, you know, and of course, poor guy, he can't type because he's never, I mean, it's the first time he's ever used a typewriter. So determined and so sincere. And he wrote, I think we put actually the email that he wrote to Sherry. That was the first email that he sent. He wrote an email to Sherry expressing his gratitude. And I just pictured him there in his house for like, you know, probably 45 minutes typing this one little email, you know, hunting for those keys. And I just know in 6 months' time we're going to go back there and he's going to be like wildfire on that thing because he's so determined to learn it. And to get on there and to, you know, to do all the, to be the reporter, basically. He's just really, really excited about it.
Yeah, that's really fun. Yeah, you did publish that letter in the blog. It was wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, just, so I think there were so many content pieces, and I'm holding back on some of them because they're going to be part of the last blog. But in addition to all the content pieces, it just felt like the process of the trip was really, just really wonderful, really kind of magical almost. You know, we had the trip in January where Sherry and Melinda and I were there, and we had some pretty intense conversations with the cooperative there. And it was, I realize now that it laid the groundwork for turning a corner in the project where folks, the cooperative members really got it that, wow, this is ours. This isn't just donors from some faraway place are giving money and we just do work. This is our project. And I think in some ways that was, whoa, this is our project, in the way that I think anyone who takes responsibility for anything sort of has a waking up moment of, wow, this is, you know, I need to take responsibility for this. There was that piece of it, and there was the piece of this is an enormous possibility for us. I project at least that people hadn't really gotten that before, and that in January the seeds for that were planted, and this trip we were really seeing what they've done with that. And just as a real quick example, Michael, I know we got to go, but one of the things we talked about with the team is this really is a team. You know, there's a team in Cantalumba, there's the team in the United States, and this is a big team effort. And so whenever there's something that needs to happen on the Cantalumba side, you guys get together, you talk about it, what part of it can you take responsibility for, and then write to us, okay, here's what we're thinking, and here's what we could use help with. So I just talked to Teresa this morning, and I had what to me was just an amazing conversation where she told me they want to go for the mosquito nets. They think it's important to try to do everything they can on the malaria front to really get a handle on it. And so they've decided that mosquito nets are really important to them. And the mosquito nets are 39,000 kwacha, which I can't do the math quickly in my head, but anyway, $8, $10, something like that. And they've decided that each of them can come up with 12,000 kwacha. So that's like $2 or $3. That's a lot of money, a lot of money for someone in Cantalumba. But what they're doing, I project in that, is they're communicating, this is important to us. And can you come up with the remainder of the funds to cover the nets if we can come up with the beginning of it? And I just felt like that is exactly it. That's what we want to be, is a team together, each of us doing our part, each of us having our piece of ownership over the project and doing what we can do together to make the whole thing work. So I'm just feeling pretty inspired about it these days.
That is really great. What I heard in that story is a lot of willingness. Here's what I can do. You know,
yep.
Here's as much as I can contribute.
Yep.
And we're a team. And how can we together get to this goal that we've both decided on is important?
Yeah, exactly. And it's such an interesting thing because, you know, could the folks in the U.S. come up with the extra $2 for the mosquito net? Yeah, they could. But is that really, in the biggest picture, is that the best thing for everyone? Or is it much better for everyone if we all feel like this is ours and we feel some ownership for it and we're each putting in what we can put in? And that's different for each of us, but we're all contributing. It feels like it's a much better deal for everyone.
Yeah, it feels really great. And that's what I see modeled in practice all the time, is really taking responsibility for what am I bringing to life? What is my contribution? Am I being helpful, or am I listening to the voices that are telling me some story about that?
Yes, and the only way my life is going to be transformed is if I step up to the plate and do what I can for myself. Practice, Sangha, the guide has so much support to offer me, and a critical piece of it is I have to step up there and be part of it too.
That's the critical piece.
The critical piece.
So exciting.
It is.
Jen, Tracy, thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Okay.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Goodbye.
Bye.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Hi, Michael.
How are you?
Good. That was very fun to listen to.
Oh yes.
Yeah, I've been hearing a little bit about that since the folks got back, but that was a really nice perspective to hear, especially Tracy's perspective. I've heard more from Jen, but Tracy's perspective and realizing that change that she's witnessed.
Yes. Yeah, it's great that she has that window from her previous trips of how things were.
Yeah.
She goes back to the same place and sees lives transformed.
Yeah, because for those of us who are going there all the time, it's not that we're not aware of how big the changes are in, say, a year or 2 years. You know, it's very good. Yes.
Exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Gary, I have some announcements here.
All right.
Some exciting events that you will be leading. Namaste, which is in Felton, June 18th to 19th, and
mm-hmm.
that workshop supports the work that we just talked about.
Yes. That money goes directly to Cantalumba.
Yes. And then about a month later, you'll be at Mount Madonna from July 30th through August 2nd.
Yes.
another weekend workshop.
And then on a plane to Zambia, so we'll get more blogs.
Yes, more blogs. So much fun. And then after you get back from Zambia in September, you'll be at Nalanda West, which is in Seattle, on September 17th and 18th.
Mm-hmm.
And then in October, you'll be heading to the Northeast for a retreat in Chester, Connecticut, on October 17th through 20th.
That is going to be one gorgeous retreat, don't you think?
Oh, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in the Northeast in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some callers here.
Good. Let's see what they've got to say for themselves.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Jodine calling from California.
Hey, Jodine.
Hi. Well, I want to make up for my last call where I think I squeezed in like four different topics.
Shame on you.
I know, I'm so bad, conditioning says. What I've been looking at, I'll just say that I write down, after the email class of the movie, I forget
uh-huh.
the whole beginning of it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I have continued using a little chime when I'm at work, and I just, that was one of the tools that I picked that I was going to do for a month at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just going to kind of write down, you know, who I was or what was going on, you know, just jot a little note, and then I get kind of a picture of, you know, what was going on in my head,
yeah.
You know, throughout my day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been so helpful. I've continued it. And luckily, I caught this gem that came in the other day, and I'll just read it. It just dropped in, the chime rang, and I wrote down, if there's anything you really want from your heart, we're going to do everything possible to explore that together.
Wow. And you just heard that come into your head?
You know, it was like it just kind of dropped in.
Wow.
And
somebody worth talking with, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, what I'm seeing is that was my mentor talking to me, basically.
Yes.
And the funny thing is, I looked back just now. I was like, oh, I have to start when I call the radio show about this. I have to start with that. And the day before, I was really identified, and all the stuff I was writing down was about, like, basically hating my job and feeling like, is my life going to look like this, look like it does now forever and ever? That's actually the last thing that I wrote down the day before. Because all of this stuff, basically, the content of the process, like I'm seeing that the process is about my heart's desires.
Uh-huh.
And how do I know them? How do I get in contact with what I really want in my heart?
Mhm. Mhm. So there you are going along, looking at that. You hear a voice that says something along the lines of, is it always going to be like this? And the very next day, the chime goes off and you hear the voice of somebody interested in assisting you to achieve, to receive whatever it is that is your deepest heart's desire.
Yeah, how cool is that?
kind of takes a person to that ask and you shall receive place, doesn't it?
Mm. I'm so glad you said that, because one of the things that I've seen around this, there's lots of content going around this for me for the past couple of years, but one of the things that I've seen, and I hope I can kind of state this clearly, is that before I really had an awareness practice, conditioning was focusing on that I should do something noteworthy with my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, career.
Something other than living your life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There was never, it was almost like, you know, how I felt about it and what I wanted was completely irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like, well, I did really well in college, so I should go to grad school, and I should go to the best grad school I can go to, and I should, you know, be the top of my class, and, you know, all this stuff. And
so that'll be noteworthy.
Yeah, that will lead me to, well, it's like, not that would be noteworthy, but I mean, it would be noteworthy kind of, but it was always like this goal of like, I mean, you know, like winning a Nobel Prize or something, that's the kind of magnitude of it. Like, that's the standard that I was held up to.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've seen, and then like, anyway, that went where that goes, which was to, like, straight to hell, basically, and a miserable couple of decades of my life, including two nervous breakdowns in pursuit of, you know, this standard, meeting this standard.
Yeah, being who you should be.
And then, like, and so recently, I saw that two things have happened that are really interesting. One is that the conditioning learned the language of awareness practice.
Yes.
And it came in, I mean, we know this happens, right? But I saw it so clearly for myself with my content recently. I was like, oh my gosh. So it came in the back door and it said, well, okay, now that you have, my two nervous breakdowns had a bit of an effect on my career, that it really wasn't going where conditioning thought it should. And so it was like, so conditioning kind of gave up on me for a long time. But when it came back in the back door, it was like saying something like, well, now that you have this awareness practice and you're so keyed into like the mind and how the mind works and all this, well, you should do a career now. You should do a new career that combines your old career and like Buddhist psychology.
Uh-huh.
And you,
I bet they have a Nobel Prize for that.
Well, if they, you know, basically
they
it was
will.
Like, you know,
they
there
will.
Was some, well, you have some kind of prize, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And when I saw that, here's what I want to get to is, when I saw that I was listening to the same voice that's been talking to me my entire life, with, you know, just plugging in, you know, my current life situation.
Yeah.
I had this day, and I'll tell you that I was right there with this. I mean, I am right now, I am working two paid jobs and two volunteer jobs to try to, like, optimize my chances of getting into this new career.
Wow.
And the day that this kind of fell apart was that I found out I didn't get into the graduate program that I wanted to. So I won't be going to graduate school this fall to pursue this new career to do something really noteworthy with my life, quote unquote. And I sat there that day. I pulled these little one-word reminders from a jar next to my door. The word I pulled out of the jar that day was empty. And the whole day, I sat there and I watched conditioning try to get me on a new project.
Yeah. Same process.
Yeah. And I just said,
a new focus.
Right. Like, after 2 years of trying to get into these graduate programs, this giant disappointment, and what does conditioning have to say?
Yeah.
Well, you should write a book about and I'm like, oh no, no books. You know what? No, nothing.
Uh-huh.
Nothing. You know what? I think that, like, for the next, I think it would be really nice to do nothing for the next year, or maybe the rest of my life.
Well, nothing more noteworthy than being really present in your life.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. Well, and then the other thing, and well, there's, I could say a lot about that, because that, yes, it's like, but what I wanted to say was, this, you know, this thing about the mentor dropping in, the thing that I kind of got to on that empty day was pretty much like a prayer, like, you know, I'm here. I wanted to do all this. I wanted to do things with my life, and it hasn't worked out. And you know what? What if you, life, do what you want with me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. What if you just remain open to whatever possibilities life presents to you? Say yes. Say thank you. Enjoy yourself. Be present. Notice what happens. Might that be, when all is said and done, a pretty darn noteworthy kind of a life?
I'm starting to suspect that it is, because, you know, I drop into that at times.
Yeah.
So I think the difficulty that, but there's difficulty too. There's somebody there who feels like, or something like, that can't be it.
Well, in a lucid moment, don't you suspect you know who that is? So it's like when I'm working with people and, you know, we're going along and all of a sudden they see something. You can tell by the look on their face and the look in their eyes. They saw it. They got it. And they sit there kind of stunned for a few seconds and then they say, but it can't be that simple. Well, yeah, it is that simple. It actually is that simple. But there's nowhere for egocentric karmic conditioning to go in that simplicity. And so it starts scrambling around looking for, but that can't be it. That can't be it. There has to be, and it's, as you say, it's heading you down another track. So
okay,
yeah.
So that's just ego trying to find some place to stand.
That's it. That's my suspicion. That's my suspicion. Yeah, because there's, you know, when life is living us, and as we know from our own experience, life has much bigger and better ideas for us than we than ego is ever going to let us have. or participate in. You know, it'll hold up a lot of things for us, better ideas about what our life could be. But life's ideas for us are actually the best. And so when we allow ourselves to relax into that, when life is just living us and we are going where life is taking us, there's nothing to talk about. There is no conversation in conditioned mind, because there aren't any decisions, there aren't any questions, there aren't any issues, there aren't any judgments or comparisons or figuring things out. You know, people, in any workshop, I don't care what the content of the workshop is supposed to be, not very far into it, somebody wants to know, yeah, but how do you make decisions? And, of course, my response is, well, you don't. And that is the most, to egocentric karmic conditioning, that is absolutely unacceptable. And yet, it is so obviously true. Okay, so you're going along and you're listening to a voice in your head that has an idea about who you are and who you should be and how your life should be and what matters and what's meaningful and all of that. And life is going, your life is going to be whatever your life is. That's all there is to it.
Yep.
There is no alternative. We have no effect on it whatsoever. Now, to the degree that we are moving along sort of in sync with life, then it can seem like we are making decisions. You know, we're in charge of things. So, you know, I'm the captain of my ship or the whatever the heck it is, okay, until it becomes clear that I'm not. Because I just got run over by a truck, or because whatever it is that happened. You know, so, yeah, everything is going fine by my standards as long as it's going fine by my standards. And then life interrupts with my life. And for karmic conditioning, of course, this is a big mistake, and I've done something wrong, and it's all my fault, and if I'd only done this other thing. But it was never going to go any other way than the way it goes. It's just obvious to me. When we look at life, that's always the case. People always live as long as they live. They always get whatever sicknesses and diseases they get.
Yes.
Whatever happens to them is what happens to them. You know, it's just like, how can we miss that little fact? And all of our wanting and maneuvering and agonizing and angsting just doesn't have anything to do with anything, except our two choices are: you can either go where life leads you and be happy with that, or you can try to go where ego wants you to go and be miserable. But those are really our only two choices. And again, it's not my experience that life wants us to go in anything other than great places.
Yes.
Ego is the one that's constantly trying to raise the standards until we fail.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Keep me posted, huh?
Okay, I will, definitely. Thank
All
you
right.
so much.
Thanks, Jodine. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jodine. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do. And we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
How free would you be? How deep would you love? to your beautiful heart.
This music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
Once you bathe in an ocean of roses, once you swam in a river of joy.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have more callers here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, Sherry. It's Jonathan from England.
Hey, Jonathan.
How are you?
How are you doing? Good, good. What's going on?
Well, I was just really listening to that conversation, and some penny dropped. I'm not quite sure what it is yet. And what I was going to talk to you about was when sort of conditioning says, you know, this issue is too serious, you know, it's too important, you can't just shelve this as another story. I suppose some of the things I've been working through in that regard are things like experiences I've had in Christianity and things like global warming. I mean, for example, conditioning says, like, well, global warming might look like a story, but it's also real, you know, it's really happening.
Well,
and I think that's one of the things that I've been sort of struggling with, in the sense of I don't know. You've probably heard this 1,000 times, but this kind of thing. But it's like the issue seems too serious for you to turn around and say, "Well, I don't buy that. I don't buy this story. It's just another story from conditioning, designed to make me."
Here's the deal. It is just another story from conditioning, if it's a story. Now, that does. There's nothing about awareness practice, at least not awareness practice the way I do it, that says you should or shouldn't do anything. So, to me, job one is to realize we're going to die. Okay, we're all going to die, and the odds are really good that all of us alive on this planet right now will die before the Earth does. Okay. If that's what's going to happen. So getting derailed into something that we think is more important than facing the fact that we are short timers here, to me, is a waste of time. Okay? Getting caught up in something, some idea about something that causes us to lose sight of the fact that what's available to us is to wake up and end suffering. So I'm going to postpone that reality because I'm going to get all caught up in politics or who's doing this or who's doing that or the, you know, the this or the that or the something else, and I'm going to change people and I'm going to fix the world. And to me, that's a complete, absolute, utter waste of time and is a story from egocentric karmic conditioning. Now, then, given that, we're all free agents and we get to do whatever we want to do. So if we look at somebody like Mahatma Gandhi, he decided to combine those two. He decided, he probably never decided, but at least he went along with it when he was guided in that direction, to use something like gaining liberation for his people as a way of finding compassionate acceptance for himself, within himself, and for and with everyone and everything else. So, again, anything that we want to take on, we can take on. If it's done with a way that says, and I'm going to do this so that there is compassion for all to the best of my ability, that's one thing. If I'm going to take this on because it's really serious and important and I have to hate half the people on the planet in order to accomplish it, to me, it's just not worth it.
Mm. You know, I think I No, that's great. I mean, I follow everything that you're saying. I think I'm just trying to sort of illustrate some of the psychological, it's like the impact of becoming a slightly more aware and regarding some of these things that seem like such cultural and social imperatives as actually options, genuine options in life. You know, you don't have to accept what people think is right and wrong, and you don't have to accept. I just noticed as I go up against it, like that's when conditioning is at its most sort of shrill and insistent, and
yes.
that's what gives the game away to me.
Yeah, exactly.
At the same time, there's this like this doubt at the end, and I sort of think, well, you know, what if like I'm wrong and it's not really a story, it's also, but I don't know, it kind of goes round in the...
Well, but that's when we employ logic. You know, how can it be? we have enough history available to us to know that people have been essentially doing the same thing for as long as there have been people. And the issues have changed. You know, now I'm in this country and we hate those people, or now I'm male and the problem is female, and now I'm female and the problem is male, and now I'm poor and the problem is rich people, and now I'm rich and the problem is poor people. And, you know, it is just the content, just the stuff of life and of human existence. So to spend too much time thinking any of it in and of itself is real, you know, I mean, how many people before us have wrestled with these things? They're long dead. We have no idea who they were or what they were doing, and all of the issues are still right here. And again, to me, the most fundamental one of all is I'm going to die. Mm. That is the bottom line for me.
So that you would say that's the starting point for recognizing what is not a story and what is actually
the truest thing. The point of that is, that's a starting point for, so my job, my work, is to be at peace with that.
Right.
To have equanimity about that. To be all right with whatever happens in life. I don't need to fear anybody or anything. I don't need to hate anyone or anything. I don't need to avoid. I don't need to, okay, because I am at peace with everything exactly as it is. Now then, what do I want to do with my life?
Mm-hmm.
But as long as I'm afraid of anything, avoiding anything, worried about anything, anxious about anything, dreading anything, not wanting to face anything, I'm a victim. There is no way around it. And of course, what I'm going to be a victim to is egocentric karmic conditioning and self-hatred. Not to life. Because life is just cruising along, right? It's that survival system that would like to live as a parasite on my life that is going to cause me to suffer over every issue that is unresolved.
So possibly as I head into this kind of world of conditioning and exposing conditioning, I'm also getting to grips with the real me, you know, like parts of me that do feel unresolved. I mean, is that likely to be another way of looking at this process?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, so one of the things that, you know, just with being presented with an image like that, so what people run into is, okay, then what are my priorities? What do I want to do? It's what Jodine was talking about. Okay, if that's the case, if I have this one shot at waking up and ending suffering, one shot at liberation, do I really want to spend this one lifetime pursuing what the voices of ego say is meaningful? Is that really what I want to do? Probably not. Now, there are a ton of people who are alive on this planet right now who have no idea that ending suffering in one lifetime is an option. So, okay, great. If you don't know it, you don't know it. It's not a problem for you. But once you do know it, once you get it, that that's what's possible, then looking at what you want to spend your time and energy on becomes a whole different issue. You know, do you really want to save for your retirement? Do you really want to focus on making sure that your health insurance is up to date? Do you really, is that really what you want to be doing?
That's the number one priority.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Now, once those issues are resolved, again, you're free to do whatever it is that you want to do. You're free to do whatever it is that you want to do along the way, but I just like to encourage people to have some degree of clarity about the choices that they're making. So I can either, Jodine was talking about, I can either give my time and energy and attention to my heart, to what fulfills my existence, to what liberates me and enables me to live a life of compassion and joy, or I can give my time, energy, attention, and awareness to the voices of karmic conditioning and suffering.
I think that's what I'm doing. Is, you know, I'm giving my attention to my heart, and it's sort of at the same time it's making me nervous. But I mean, I'll give you an example. Like, I'll come in from work, and like, you know, conditioning immediately says, "Well, you need a drink. You've had a stressful day." And just every day, I've been going like, "Well, actually, I don't really need
right.
a drink. I'm not that stressed."
Right.
Do you know what
yes.
I mean? It's like a completely
oh.
different relationship.
Absolutely.
But then I've got yes. this. Then I've got the evening, you know, free to sort of like sit down and have a think. Oh, what am I doing with my life? Like, what? I've turned around to have a really deep conversation with my heart, and like now it's like the game's really started. Do you know what I mean? It's like we're not farting about here, if you excuse my English slang. We're not messing around here. It's like it's kind of everything's got a bit more serious and a bit clearer.
Yes.
And it's sort of scary, you know.
It's just that. Okay, so here, just maybe this will be some consolation. The only thing that's scared about your life right now is egocentric karmic conditioning. Your heart's not afraid. The heart is not afraid of anything. And so, you know, to get pulled into a conversation about how frightening it is to look at life at such a deep level, that's just changing one piece of content. That's like saying, you know, oh God, I have a headache. It's probably a brain tumor.
Yeah.
Okay. So we get to see all of the ways that karmic conditioning wants to pull us into its fears. So you have a whole evening. You can practice just noticing. You can practice just breathing and going about doing what you're doing mindfully and presently and watching what arises, not getting caught in, not buying into it, not believing it, but just noticing everything that as it arises and noticing how many times it wants to pull you into a conversation about anything rather than simply being.
Well,
it's
great. It's great to talk to you again. I'm having. I mean, it probably doesn't sound like it from the tone of my voice, but I'm having a great time with all of this.
Well, I'm very glad, and I got to tell you, I'm really heartened to hear you say things like, you know, you come home and the voices say, oh, you've had a really stressful day, you need a drink, and you stop and look and go, well, actually, I'm not that stressful. No, I actually don't.
Yeah.
That's the kind of movement that frees us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's great.
Well, thank you. Well, have a good show, and I'll
thank you.
I'll speak
thank
to you,
you
soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Let us hear from you soon. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jonathan. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, that was a fun and inspiring conversation.
Yeah. It's good, isn't it? I mean, I just always like to make that point whenever I get a chance to make it, that the only thing that's afraid is ego, and all it's afraid of is losing control.
Yes.
Yeah, so it, you know, it worries about us not being in control, and of course it that all that translates into is it not being in control of us.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's not to minimize how scary it is, because it is. It's very scary when it gets all worked up about something and starts, you know, waking us up in the middle of the night with all of the things that are wrong or have been wrong or could go wrong or that sort of thing. So it's a great discipline of awareness practice to say, yes, this is going on, and that's why I practice. I practice because egocentric karmic conditioning is very, very scary. And so that's good. Good reminders.
Yes, and it reminds me of, I think you talking about, or maybe it was Gandhi, that idea of how helpful it is to have that, you know, an enemy or an opposition that really won't give up.
Yeah, a worthy opponent.
Worthy
Thank
opponent.
You, Michael.
That's
Thank
what
you
I was
just
for
that sentence of putting I don't know whether it was you, Sherry, talking about that or Gandhi. I could die with a smile on my face just from that.
Yeah,
it is good. It's good that that there's enough going on in our lives and that we're challenged enough that we don't have to worry that something is going to go by us unnoticed, that's going to you know, give us trouble down the line. Life just in its infinite wisdom and compassion keeps challenging us in ways that if we just stay with it will absolutely lead to our freedom.
Yes. Yes. Sherry, let's stop, drop, and breathe. And then
always
we'll
a good idea. Always a good idea. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by Voice Busters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe. Uh-huh.
Welcome back.
Hey, Michael, we're going to actually try to contact that advertising company that did that last ad.
Oh.
And see if they'll do an ad for the Sangha Market.
Oh, that's very fun.
Don't you think?
That is very fun.
I'm going to get into negotiations with them pretty soon. Those purveyors.
Of the finest practice opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Indeed. I have a smile on my face already. And we have another caller.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Greta from Washington.
Hey, Greta. How are you?
Well, I'm hanging in there.
Wait. A better question is, what's going on?
Well, the other calls were really helpful, but I have my really real issue that I'm struggling with, which is physical pain.
Yeah.
And I want to do it differently this time. You know, there's part of me that wants to let go and let life guide me. And then there's the struggle with the suffering around that and not really believing that it could be different.
Uh-huh. Do you mean, relate that, I understand that part of it, but relate it for me, please, to the physical pain. So there is the physical pain, and then there's letting go, and how's that work?
Well, there's a process that I do, like many of us, where I struggle. There's something wrong. So it gets put into the category of something wrong, and then I have to figure it out. And I get pretty obsessive about figuring it out. And, you know, oh, maybe it's this or maybe it's that. And I could spend my whole life trying this remedy or that remedy or looking at this or looking at that and looking for every little minute change that, you know, maybe that means that this is the magic cure. And what I know about this physical pain is that it's a huge way that conditioning controls what I'm doing with my life. Is I'm always in that relationship with myself.
Yeah, it's got you. Now, let me ask you this. What is your belief system about the pain? And what I'm specifically asking is, do you have a belief system that says that there is this pain, that's how it is, it's always going to be there, I just need to accept that, I just need to adjust to it? Or is there a part of your belief system that says, if I were different about this, I'm not even sure that the pain would be there?
Well, what comes up for me is realizing that I never can see my life without it. But it's not an accepting. It's this is the way it is, and I'm miserable, and, you know, it's wrong because I can't do the things I want to do with my life because I can't get over this hurdle. It's like this big block.
Uh-huh. Now, I'm still not clear, though. Is it something where, you know, if you were in a wheelchair and you're paralyzed from the waist down, then we would say, well, you know, okay, and what you're convinced of is that's not going to be different and that's just how it is, and so we need to accept that. Is it something like that, or is it something that somebody would say, well, actually, no, you know, conceivably you could move through this, you could get beyond this, it wouldn't necessarily have, you know.
Conceivably, there could be a remedy where I wouldn't, there could be a certain drug or modality where I could be in less pain, you know, where I could be free of some of it. It's really affects my life in that it's my head. So it affects my ability to think and my ability to perform my job and do physical.
So it's like headaches.
Oh, it's migraine headaches. Yeah, every day.
Migraine headaches. Okay, I see.
Go ahead.
No, I was just getting clear that, I mean, there's a whole range of things about that.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
But what I see in, you know, so much of what I've been looking at this last couple weeks is, you know, how I am with it is just, it's almost like I fight with it, and I'm not in cooperation with my subpersonalities as a team to try and work through this. And that's why I'm saying I want to do it differently. But it's a scary place to be because I get to the point where I don't function and then, you know,
now,
then
what,
the
what,
conditioning
what,
gets in there.
What is scary, though? I mean, if you're in opposition to it and that's not working, what would be scary about an alternative?
Well, there's part of me that gets scared because it hurts so much, and I believe it will. Then that belief comes in that it will never be different. And what I've seen about that is, I intellectually know that if I can be all right with this, I can be all right with anything.
Yeah.
But I'm not quite to the point where I get that with my full being.
Yes. So that's that same place that people will often hear people refer to it at whatever level, and I will say, yes, and we know who that is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because there is nothing, I do not believe that there is anything in life that would want you to suffer like that.
Right.
Except the one survival system that has its survival in your suffering.
Right, and that's where we make the distinction between the suffering and the physical pain.
Yes.
Because there's a belief that if the physical pain is gone, you know, then I'm the right person, and then suffering is gone. But that isn't true.
Right. You know that from your life experience, right?
Yes.
There's always,
yes,
for that system of suffering, there's always something. It just
right.
will move. If the pain went away today, boom, it would just start scanning for the next thing. It's, again, back to the first caller. You know, okay, well, that didn't work out. Well, then what you should do is, so it just starts scanning for the next source of suffering.
Right, right. And when I talked to you about this several months ago, when I saw that so much of the tension in my body was just a reaction to conditioned mind, you know, I just got it, and I've been telling myself what you said to me at the time was, you know, there have been times when I have been without pain, and I go right back into conditioned behavior. And what you said to me was, but this time you're not going for ending the pain, you're going for ending the suffering.
Mm.
And so that's the, you know, that's the place that, it kind of feels like a knife edge that I'm hanging on to right now. It's
well,
like, I really do want to end the suffering.
Yes, and when the fear arises, you know, it's the hardest thing. I've been looking at this so much lately. The my inability to clearly communicate to people what is you. And what is egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate?
Mm-hmm.
It is so difficult. And, you know, I don't even think it's necessarily a flaw in me. It's just really difficult for people to get that is not me that feels that fear. That's
right.
Egocentric karmic conditioning that feels the fear. Yes,
okay.
It feels it in your body. Yes,
uh-huh,
it
uh-huh.
jolts up through your being. Yes, it's right there to say, I'm afraid, but it's not you.
Uh-huh.
So it's very afraid that you're going to end the
right.
suffering, because ending the suffering means ending it.
Right. Well, and that's why it's making this really big and really real and making it a real contest and,
yes.
you know, what it means about it if I can find the cure and all of that.
Yes, because, of course, what you can see in this is the layers of suffering, so
mm-hmm.
which feed it, right? I mean,
yeah.
that's another one of the things that's so hard for us to get is that there is a system operating there that desperately wants us to be in suffering. That just seems so wrong. And yet it's obvious that that's how it is, that that's what's happening. So here you've got this pain, and it's a hideous pain. It's scary. It's easy to be frightened by it, because how could something hurt that bad and not be killing you? So there's that level. Then there's getting you into looking for a cure. Well, the suffering there is just endless, because it can have you pointing, you know, well, look at this. Well, what about that? Well, what about that? Well, if you did that, well, then that means that. And that conversation with it is its life. Yeah?
Oh, yeah. And
yeah.
and not only its life, it has been a, you know, it has just taken so much of my attention in my life.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I'm seeing more and more how much of my energy goes to that place, a huge
right.
chunk. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. 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 And then if none of that's going on, it'll start in about what this pain, this physical condition has done to your life, what you can't do,
yeah.
how it limits you, how it, so
right.
the, just story after story after
right.
story. You get to one place where that's all you can really suffer over that particular story, and then it just moves to the next thing that will cause the maximum suffering, and the next thing that will cause, and then it can cycle right back through to, and what if this never ends? And what does that mean for your life? And how long are you going to be able to work? And if you can't work, then what's going to happen? And what about your relationship? How can you be in a, who's going to want to be in a relationship with somebody who, yeah?
Oh, yeah. All of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I
well,
guess what, go ahead.
Well, I just, you know, I just offer you, you know, every bit of support and energy I can for ending the suffering in it. But, you know, I'm really glad that you can see so clearly the difference between the pain and the suffering, and that the pain is what it is. It may leave you at some point, and it may not. Okay? There. That's that. But the suffering is what you do have a chance to end. You have a degree of influence over that. Control,
well, and what,
if you will.
What kind of came to me is, in listening to the archives, despite the fact that it doesn't feel good, that it's what life is presenting me with right now. And I know
yeah.
what you're saying, that it doesn't want me to suffer. And it's like I can't... my attention is now focused on practice because my hair is literally on fire. You know,
yeah.
it really hurts there.
Yeah.
And so there's all the ways I may have tried to avoid practice or maybe be practicing half-heartedly. Now it's like, okay, Greta, you know, here's your choice to make that difference, that the pain isn't
yeah.
personal. It doesn't mean anything about you. And, you know, what about having a different relationship with yourself in this
yeah.
experience?
Yeah. Are you willing to go
yeah.
to go where you need to go in order to
yep.
save her from that suffering?
That is exactly
that's,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
yeah.
you know, as much as I don't want to believe that it's perfect for me at this time, that's what it seems, that's what comes up for me.
Oof.
So it feels like a big pill to swallow, but, you know, in the end, I think I have to save her, and I have to be willing to do that.
Yes, which is right back to what I was attempting to communicate with that we're going to die.
Yeah.
You know, and we have two choices. We can let that person die without being liberated, or that person will die liberated. That's not exactly correct language, but you know what I mean. Those are really our only two choices.
Well, and all both previous callers' conversations tonight have really spoken to what I'm looking at and just continuing to look at and see and how I can be with myself in a better way or another way
yeah,
compared
but you,
to what
how,
I can offer.
Right, how you can embrace her completely in unconditional love.
Yes.
All the time, every moment of the day or night, regardless of her life experience.
Right.
Yeah,
and
that's it, your opportunity.
It is. It
yeah.
is. And that, and it, I've seen it before, and I guess, you know, for whatever reason, it has to get really loud to get the willingness up. So
well,
that will be my challenge.
Yeah, and lest you take any of this personally, it's true for every one of us. The content will be different,
right?
But the challenge will be the same. You know, it's
right.
that all that's required is that we accept that
right.
which is most unacceptable to us. That's
right.
all we need to do to be free.
I'm very grateful. I don't know how I would be where I am without the practice.
Well, thank you for doing it.
Thank you, Sherry. Okay. Thank you, Michael.
Take care.
You're welcome.
I will. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Greta.
You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Wow, that was inspiring, Sherry.
Man. people are heroic.
Yes, that's the word.
Really heroic. Yeah. I love this practice. I love this sangha. I am so grateful that we're all doing this together.
Oh, it's amazing. I don't know how I could do it otherwise.
Mm-mm. No, I know for myself I wouldn't have a snowball's chance in hell. So, much gratitude. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thanks to our many callers and our many listeners, and I will invite those callers to call in early next week.
All right. Talk to you then.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night, Michael.
Good night.